Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we are talking about another classic, I guess, I hadn't seen before. We're seeing The Princess Diaries, a kind of fun teen movie that was recommended to me, and I think we put a pretty good episode on it. Please keep suggesting things outside of our purview, because it really ends up being a great decision on our part. Thanks for subscribing, listening. Please review us. We haven't gotten a lot of new reviews recently, and I'm worried that they're dropping off. Also, please sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/myopia, if you want extra episodes. I guess you are paying for them. But we put out a newsletter. We have some stuff that's fun up there, and at the $10 level, you get movie riffs with the movies attached. So, thanks, guys.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we see Anne Hathaway Begins. I'm Nick Hoffman, your host with the mostest, and riffer on Cineproblem, how we've got.
Atlanta author Matthew W. Quinn.
Charlie Rose.
Jeremy.
And we are here to talk about The Princess Bride from 2000. God damn it, I did it again! We already did The Princess Bride. Princess Diaries from 2001, starring Hector Elizondo. I'll say it. He shows up as a badass. Julie Andrews is good. And this is the G-rated version of The 10 Things I Hate About You, about She's All That, about all of these movies. Like, I knew where the plot was going the whole time, and I was so charmed. Oh, this is such a charming little movie. What do you think? I'm going to keep nervously talking.
It was a little too long, I thought, but it had a lot of really funny jokes, which I actually live-tweeted this movie throughout to most of today.
Oh, God. Matt, plug your Twitter.
Oh, Lord. Okay, fine. At Matthew W. Quinn. You can go back, and by the time this airs, it'll be hard to find, but I live-tweeted this movie, and there are actually some really funny jokes.
Also, okay, so little etiquette of Matt, for Matt, just really quick. Make sure you keep mentioning the movie. Because you didn't do a tweet chain. So if you can find his random tweets, they are funny. They're just so funny because you came across this movie like a kid on Christmas where you're like, ooh, this was good. But you don't explain it. It's really funny. I was genuinely laughing.
I live to entertain you.
That's right. So who wants to give us the plot synopsis? Charlie?
Sure, why not? Anne Hathaway. She stars as Mia. And Mia grew up in San Francisco with her single mother. Basically, the plot is when she turns 15 and a half, she finds out that her father was the prince who was supposed to become king. He died, and now she's the crown princess of, what's the name of the country?
Gordovia?
Genovia.
Genovia.
Which is supposed to be that little country between France and Spain.
Yeah, correct.
Even though it sounds like it should be next to Switzerland or something,
it should
right?
be the independent principality of Switzerland. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, and so basically hilarity ensues because she is awkward, she has big frizzy hair, she's basically just a terrible choice for a princess.
Yeah.
And so the plot of the movie follows her going through princess training to become a princess by Julie Andrews.
Oh, my goodness.
Extreme makeover.
Gorgeous. The beautiful,
regal Julie Andrews.
Who was 66 when this movie came out, but does not look it at all.
First of all, she's timeless.
Timeless.
That is going to be a hard death for the gay community. I mean, for the community.
For everyone.
Yeah. I mean, like, the fact that Julie Andrews is queen in this is just the best. Yeah. Like, it's phenomenal. Like, and I guess it's ironic, again, to place this exactly when we watched it. Yesterday, Captain Von Trapp died.
Yes.
And so I was thinking how appropriate it was that I was watching a Julie Andrews movie, because I watch Christopher Plummer all the time, if only to spite Kevin Spacey. But anyway, thank you, Charlie.
Yeah, that was it. The simplest plot summary ever.
This is like Extreme Makeover, the Julie Andrews edition.
Well, I mean, it's She's All That, but instead of being like the prom queen, she's literally princess. Like, let's Disney this up 20%. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Just 20%?
I will say, though, unlike the other teen movies which do this, they actually, I mean, and again, it's Anne Hathaway, she's a beautiful woman, they ugly her up. Like, they really do, like, as opposed to She's All That, where she just takes off her glasses, and she's like, dude, you're beautiful now.
I would argue that it's, you know, the Hollywood ugly, which is
fair.
You know, a Hollywood 3 is like a real life 7.
Well, right, but they do make the change from her being a real life 7 to real life 9 or 10.
And they even do it pretty early. Like when she and her mom are climbing, she has her hair back instead of that weird frizz she's got going, and she's still good looking.
Yeah. I think where they excel is they made it less about, in my opinion, they made it less about her physical looks and more about how she interacts with the world.
Yes.
And how she's awkward and how she's overbearing and how she's just not princess material.
Well, and the trailer line, which I remember the trailer line, which is, someone sat on me again today. Because she is so invisible, people literally don't see her when they sit down. Which is the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
Yeah, that was something. Also, I will say, I went to a Catholic school in 2001 as well, so all these kids wearing, like, the tartan skirts and the dudes in the button-downs, that was really getting like, oh god, they're gonna bully me too! Like, it was very much like, I knew exactly what was going on, and, yeah, no, that was rough. Oh, Matt, this is, you reminded me. In your tweet chain, but this is also very Mean Girls, which is also the same era.
Yes.
Because there's so much Mean Girl crap in this movie.
Oh, yes. Mandy Moore is the meanest girl.
Dude, and she's also, like, the gorgeous cheerleader type, right? Like, she's the one who runs in slow motion, and she gets her comeuppance, which is great.
So that's her who gets the ice cream cone?
Yes, that's Mandy Moore. Actor, singer, and star of Stay Tuned movie, what is it, Saved?
That's a great
movie. That's a great freaking, and it's got Heather Matarazzo in it.
Yes,
too.
It does too. And the star, I think he's topless, is Macaulay Culkin, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a great movie.
It is an amazing movie. I loved it.
And Heather Matarazzo, who in this movie plays the nerdy friend.
Yeah.
Whose name I'm completely
blanking.
Lily, right. And Polish last name of whatever, sorry.
Yeah. With the cute brother,
Michael.
Who was a part-time auto mechanic while in high school.
I just called him not Zac Efron.
He does look like young Zac Efron.
Yeah.
And he has the most Spock sideburns I've ever seen. Did you notice these little sharp pointy bitches? Yes. Like, they are something.
Well, I know, the hair choices in this movie were yeah. I forgot that this was the era in which you took hair and you made it dirty and greasy and clumpy, and that was fashion.
Well, and you could tell the cute guy because he parted in the middle and just left it greasy.
Yes.
So, and I think the mom, who's also the mom in Hook, even gets the line, so you're going out with the Backstreet Boy or whatever, something like that?
Yes, yes. And later there was a joke about running a comb through his hair or something.
Yeah, it was. That was.
I could swear that was Susan Sarandon. It's not Susan Sarandon.
No. It's not Susan Sarandon, but she is the mom in Hook.
She is the mom in Hook.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else she's been in.
She's been in some stuff. Yeah. I mean, like, this movie is filled with top tier character actors, but they're character actors. I mean, like, again, Hector Elizondo's in this. And, like, Hector Elizondo's that dude from Everything. Like, right? Like, that's
from Everything who can kill you.
He's awesome in this. He really is great in this.
Like, I commented, okay, so she wants to pretend that this is all, everything's normal. So you're being driven to school by a dude who looks like a Navy SEAL.
That's right. I mean, and so do you think it was down to him and Joey Pants? Because, like, he's playing a Joey Pants character. They're both rocking the bald and the sunglasses. Like, this is the guy from, this is Joey Pants, like, chewing on the steak
from The Matrix. Joey Pants is not going to break you in half.
He might
go to manic frenzy and start biting you.
No, dude.
Hector Elizondo
is, first of all, he is sexy AF in this, and he's dancing with Julie Andrews, and oh, dude, that is the sexiest scene in this. But you're misunderstanding where Joey Pants' strength comes from. He's a Joe Pesci type. He'll get a board and just hit you.
Yeah.
And hit you and hit you and hit you.
That's what I'm saying. He might, like, start biting you, but it didn't seem big.
Dude, you misunderstand.
Never underestimate crazy.
Never underestimate the power of the pants. I would rather have them both as friends, but I'd much rather have Hector Elizondo as my enemy. Because Joey Pants seems like, dude, again, it's a mafia death. You start the car one day and the car explodes. We went way off the rails.
We did.
It's fine.
G movie. We did.
I mean, okay, so here we are. Anne Hathaway is riding home on a scooter because it's 2001. And she's walking up San Francisco Hills on a razor. That is a choice. That is a choice, my friend. This movie is exact, because all the music is also boy band music. This is the most 2001 you can make a movie without towers falling.
They have a misery montage to a pop song.
I guess this is also the same year Zoolander came out, so.
Better than Zoolander,
I think. They're not the same.
Just Zoolander has the gas station.
I think Zoolander
has moments of great amusement, but overall, that movie is a trash fire. I'm sorry.
I think Zoolander was better because this movie was too long.
Okay, so yes, let's talk about that. Okay. The movie's pacing was way off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think for a movie that doesn't have a sharp, conflicting plot, which this movie didn't. The big plot was, will she become a princess or not?
And you already know she is.
And you know she is.
It's Disney, come on.
It's also the movie poster.
Yeah.
Where she is a princess.
Exactly. Exactly. And so it just ran on and on and on.
Yeah, it takes us a while to establish. But how much of a loser is she? Like,
exactly.
Every minute in this could be almost cut in half. Like, really. Like, every scene is a little too long. And again, the scene with Hector Elizondo and Julie Andrews dancing... it's beautiful. But in the previous scene, he taught Anne Hathaway how to dance.
Yep.
That scene is a third as long. You really can cut that Julie Andrews scene down. We don't need her to be bullied by every character in the movie.
Yes.
Twice.
You get in the first, like, 20 minutes that she is an outsider and that she is bullied.
That's right.
You don't need the rest of it.
Well, and specifically, she wants to be invisible. But we see that when that dude sits on her. We see it when she tries to do debate club and ends up barfing.
Yep.
Which, by the way, it's never resolved, but her mom starts dating the debate teacher.
Well, that happens out of the blue, too.
It's never touched on again. It's actually based in a book series where I think they get married.
Great. You know what? It doesn't need to be in this. I understand.
My point is they didn't develop it at all, even though they had a basis for it. It's just, like, wasted.
It is. I mean,
I think they decided that they were going to put everything that was in the book in this freaking movie.
And it's too long.
And it makes it way too long.
Also, Disney, if I write something, can I also get six? Like, I imagine once you're in that Disney circle, you're fine. Once you get published by Hyperion, they've already optioned it into a TV show at the least. So,
yeah.
You're good.
Yeah.
But
it was classic Gary Marshall fare.
Oh, this is so Gary Marshall.
This is so Gary Marshall.
I can't imagine him working with Disney. Because, like, I just imagine him stinking, like, whiskey and cigar. Like, he's who I imagine, like, Mayer was in the 40s, but in the 1990s, right?
Yes.
Gary Marshall, yeah. Like, what do you got? Oh, Disney. With the who? All right. But I bring my guy Hector. Like, it's like Wilford Brimley showing up on a Howard Hughes set. Like, it's just, he's there now.
Yeah.
And
this is one of the big issues I have with this movie. You can tell this was made by a 60-year-old man.
Yes, it was. All the jokes are... Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, are you sure you didn't want Penny Marshall? All right.
Yeah.
It is. It's like... And it also feels like the whole... Everything about it is cliff notes of, like, this is what a teen movie is now, right?
Yeah.
It's mean girls and bullying boys. I mean, I literally was watching with my daughter Shazam. Like, is it, like, that's what the high school scenes are. There's two bullies that just show up and have to threaten everyone so he has an excuse to be awesome. And that's what it is for her.
Like,
although I will say the paparazzi was a nice spice to add to this movie.
That was. You have to create a little bit of conflict along the way. The hero's journey, as it were.
to realize that that mullet and surfer boys are bad for you.
Oh, but they're the best. I mean, this is 2000. His hair is parted in the middle.
Yes, and there was a beach party scene.
Dude, it literally becomes Beach Party Mingo for 30
absolutely.
Seconds.
Absolutely.
Mandy Moore is singing a pop song.
We'll have a beach party like Annette Funicello back in the day.
Right? At this point, I mean, we can introduce Julie Andrews. Essentially, grandma comes for tea, but the grandma's dead. No, your other grandma, the one you've never met, the one who pretends that we're not real because your dad divorced me. Which, I guess great for Disney for even in its live action having a dead parent.
Yeah.
But also, like, they get real about divorce, which I appreciate. You know, like, it's kind of harsh. Not, not harsh, but like the teen is feeling emotions. The mom, we loved each other, but we had to get separated. That's not a story you get. So thumbs up for Disney.
Well, it just, it seemed so weird that they went 15, almost 16 years without telling her anything about her father.
Yeah. I wouldn't
but know. She got gifts every year from him.
That's right.
And I'm like, that just seems, well, frankly, contrived.
It's as though she's a character who appeared on the first day when that dude sat on her. Right? No, she just has no backstory. I've never asked about my dad. Who's my grandmother would be a great, like,
yeah.
Why does she speak like an English person even though she comes from between Spain and France? Like, but all these,
well, you know, it's the invented vague white person royalty country that isn't England. I mean, you know, Christmas Prince and Princess Diaries.
You're
and,
right, this is Lifetime.
I mean, this
Christmas
is,
Prince.
This is a trope. This is a trope.
It is. But, I mean, now, I would not replace Julie Andrews for anything because she's great.
Oh, no, absolutely. She's
but,
amazing.
Like, if you made it, like, half French, like, this is, she'd be in her 20s, like, passive-aggressive cousin Marion Cotillard, like, you could have, like, an actual accent here, but, I mean, we're Americans, we're confused. She's British, she's even part of an evil empire, like Star Wars, a Nazi playing not a Nazi, or a queen. Like, that's what we got. We have three things for English people, or James Bond, and, I mean... Most fuckable James Bond.
Well, I think she's referenced as marrying into the family rather than being born into it. So maybe she actually is British. Who knows?
It's possible. Anyway, regardless. We are introduced to Julie Andrews, who at tea time, where at which point the granddaughter, who doesn't know who she's meeting, goes to break every piece of glassware in here because she's such a klutz. She'll
absolutely.
Never be a princess. Yeah.
Does this reach Bella Swan level yet?
Well, I mean, Snow White knew how to do the dishes and didn't break any of them. This is Disney. It's got to be an awkward, kooky princess now. Yeah. This is the same year they put out Atlantis. That horrible...
Oh, God.
Previous
oh.
episode, the one with Michael J. Fox.
I mean, bless their hearts, they tried.
Bless their hearts. They did steampunk in 2001.
Yes.
That's a real bless their hearts. You know what did great 2 years ago? Wild Wild West. What if we made an animated Wild Wild West, but they find Atlantis? Here's $2 billion. I don't know what to say. Jeffrey Katzen. No, that's just Eisner at that point, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Julie Andrews is like, I will give you princess lessons because you have to prepare for a ball, which is, again, Disney! And she's like, Mom, I don't know if I want to do this. I have a happy face trap door in my tower. She's a princess with a tower, guys.
And let's talk about how unrealistic that they can afford, an artist can afford living in San Francisco in property that large, a firehouse.
A firehouse. She's living where the Ghostbusters do. And they keep saying she's south of Hudson. Like, we're like, oh my God, she's in the poor part. Dude, it's San Francisco.
It's San Francisco, yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're... in East Atlanta, if you have a 3.5-story house, you're still doing okay.
Yes.
I'm wondering just how much hush money they're paying her.
Dude, at one point she says, I traded 2 paintings for a 1966 Mustang. Dude, her mom is apparently the most famous painter in America.
Clearly.
I don't know if I can
this
tell
is
you.
Some insane.
And her art is let's throw darts at paint balloons.
Although I will say that scene with your SO.
Yes.
Can you imagine how much fun that would be as a date night? Mm. You have a giant canvas. You have a giant canvas with water balloons filled with paint. You're throwing darts. Little vino.
I mean, that could be fun.
That
like
is awesome.
Making out on it and like. Having sex on it would be fun.
You don't want paint getting in certain spots.
Yeah.
I mean, so you're thinking of the Big Lebowski scene where she comes in and she just sprays. They say my office is very vaginal. Oh my God, you just triggered something in my brain.
Yes, I did.
Is that a stay tuned?
So, no, we're never doing Big Lebowski. I don't know what we're talking about here other than bad impressions. So I was putting together at my class I teach, we do a document reader. We're punching it up, I'm adding pictures, and whatever. So I was on a website called Art Store, which is just a giant repository of pictures and paintings and stuff. Really good quality. And I typed in Emily Dickinson. Here's why this reminded me of it. There were no portraits of Emily Dickinson, but there's a woman named Judy Chicago. Judy Chicago is a feminist painter in the 1970s, or a feminine artist. For a Chicago art show, she made a giant triangular banquet table and made a place setting for three tridents of women power. Historical figures, mythical figures, and biblical figures. And then made a plate based on what she thought their vulvas looked like. And so around the entire table, from Georgia O'Keeffe and Emily Dickinson to Aphrodite and Amazons to Judith from the Bible, she designed immaculate plateware. Dinner china. I discovered that yesterday.
Huh.
That is a hell of a thing. I have pictures to show. It is something. I don't even know what triggered that in my mind. You brought up something very...
Who here doesn't constantly think of vulvas?
Maybe we need to remember that so we can put it in the Facebook group when this goes live.
Yeah, someone just message me. I'll put it up because it is something. I'll let you pick. I'll let the guys around the table pick which one I should show. I mean, Georgia O'Keeffe looks like half Cthulhu attack. It's something. Judy Chicago, and I told this to a colleague of mine. My school owns a painting of hers that she donated to the school. So in the library, that same woman has a painting in the library. I gotta go find it. So, Julie Andrews.
Yes, let's go back to, let's stop talking about vulvas. Let's talk about Julie Andrews. Let's talk about the fact that she doesn't sing.
Which is a disaster.
Oh my God.
She should be.
It is the most criminal thing about this movie.
Yeah, Mandy Moore does all the singing in this.
You know what? Julie Andrews said, if she sings, I don't sing. If that's the case, respect. But I think she should have been on stage at the end singing with Mandy Moore. Because that duet could have happened.
There was Mandy Moore singing. I thought it was a big dude.
No, Mandy Moore sings. Mandy Moore is a singer. Was she making Ass Club? Was she up there with Justin Timberlake? And Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears? Was she?
I don't know. I honestly don't think she's that old.
Oh, it's possible. You know. Anyway. But yeah, so Julie Andrews is going to teach her how to princess, and we get, you know, a scene right out of Risky Business where they walk through an open door frame back and forth. Sliding around in your underpants would have been a funny joke.
Yes.
Dude, all those paparazzis were taking a picture of a half-naked 16-year-old, and that makes me real uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, you know.
What's a paparazzi? What do you expect?
Yeah. Dated pop culture humor.
It is pop culture humor. I mean.
Well, I mean, hey, we got... Kellyanne Conway posting tweets of her daughter.
Her own 16-year-old daughter. That's right. Oh, God help me. Oh, gross. All of this is gross. Oh, man. Charlie or Jeremy, catch us up on the plug.
Well, the paparazzi stuff happens because eventually...
All right.
No, you're fine. I just... In case you at home were curious why that voice was not Jeremy's... That was Matt.
Nah, let's let
you're fine.
He picked up on our reluctance and he ran with it, so he all should right. continue.
Yeah, go do
on.
It, baby.
Basically, someone talks.
Right. So they want to keep the fact that she's a princess a secret.
Yeah.
Even though they're letting other people into the limo at this point. And it turns out...
But it's just a rich grandmother.
That's right.
With flags.
I mean...
And embassy plates.
And a Navy SEAL.
Dude, you're supposed to be at an elite private school. Something so expensive that your father, the prince, was paying for.
Yep.
Which that question is not addressed. It'd be great if she got kicked down to the local public school because her dad's but in the meantime, there's got to be a geography teacher at this elite private school. It's like, that's the flag of Genovese. And then everyone says, shut up, Craig, or whatever. But, then there's that moment where someone's like, why are there diplomatic flags on? And Hector Elizondo even says, if I take those down, we're not a diplomatic vehicle.
So, right, exactly. Driving,
we'll park two blocks away, and there's just children everywhere.
Right? Well, they show at one point the license plates, and they specifically say diplomatic.
How is this phone being such a pain in the ass?
It's possessed.
Sorry. So, back to the school. And one of my delights of this movie, Sandra Oh as the principal, she was hilarious. It was a great bit, character, actor part, you know, loved it. She did wonderful. She fawned all over the queen, just about died. That was hilarious. They discovered who actually did the leaking, and it was
the comedic actor.
The hairdresser.
Oh, yeah, the
what's
hairdresser.
What's his name? No, the actor's name. Do you remember?
The actor's name.
Larry Miller.
Larry Miller.
Larry Miller. Yep.
Who's putting on the Fae fake European accent of some sort. Yes. He comes in as the incredible hairdresser to defrizz her hair. And we do get this weird... I will say what's interesting is we get the weird cattiness of the friend, which, again, is very high school. I teach in high school. I see this shit all the time. Where she gets her makeover to make her less of a like a nerd, and at one point her hair is so naughty, nappy, whatever, it breaks the hairbrush in half, which is great. And he turns her into Anne Hathaway.
Like, yes.
Gorgeous, somehow looking 25 now, like Anne Hathaway looks great. At the time, I think she was literally my age. Or no, maybe a little older.
She was 17.
She's born in 82. So, and I think she's playing a 16-year-old, who cares? But yeah, I mean, he turns her, like, she has her this, she's all that moment right in the middle of the movie. The reason I like it is that her friend is jealous. Like, there's this, like, weird cattiness. That feels very real to me, that her friend is like, oh, you're trying to turn into one of the, what do they call it, the A-girls or whatever? That was cool. Like, that was nice. And then her brother's suddenly interested in her because he's like, dude, you're hot now.
I think the brother always was because he was working on her car for free.
He offered to work on a car for free. That's right. He's trying to schmooze.
And when she goes out with douchebag surfer boy, it breaks his heart.
It does. I get it.
Well, a fun fact that is timely to us watching this movie. Apparently, about a week or so ago, Anne Hathaway was on Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Yes, and she admitted that this movie was where she chose her stage name.
Really?
Because this was the first movie. And she went with Anne Hathaway, and she said she regrets that, and she has regretted it her entire life because she hates Anne, and everyone calls her Annie.
That's rough.
In fact, she's like, I'm being serious. Call me anything but Anne. Call me Annie.
Oh, my goodness gracious. That's something.
Yeah.
That's really something. Luckily, Nick Hoffman is my real name and not a stage name. Because, I mean, this is clearly what's going to be makes me popular, right?
Well, you were on the Nigerian film review chart a few days ago, so you are popular.
But it did kick off an impressive 20-year, record for Anne Hathaway. I mean, she's done some great movies.
Oh, she is.
Yeah, I mean, this was like her first big role, and it's obvious why she became a star because of it.
Yes. Because so many people could not hold a scene. And it's funny because I feel the same way about similar time period movie, The Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan, because she's great in it. But something happens.
Something happens shortly thereafter.
And I mean, we'll do it one day, but what was that movie where she plays Liz Taylor on Lifetime?
Oh, my
Liz
God.
Liz and Dick, is that right?
Yes.
Is that the one where they advertised about they had a drinking problem?
Well, and it's, I think, a Lifetime movie. It's one I watched because I heard about it on another show, and I was just like, holy shit. But, watching Lindsay Lohan, it was apparently supposed to be a 40-day shoot. She got in a DUI, and so it had to be like a 15 or 18 day shoot. And she just kept talking like this, because she's got a horrible smoker. I mean, she's younger than I am, and she looks like she's 50 in that movie. It's something. It's really something. Watch Liz and Dick. Woo! But we have Mandy Moore here, who's the bully. We should kind of talk about this part. She is the cheerleader type, and there is one cheerleader they hired. I don't know if you noticed this girl, but every time she's on screen, she's doing crazy flips and stuff.
Yeah, and everyone else is just sort of standing there moving their arms.
And the cheerleaders, who all the rest of them are actresses, are just passively at one point, the girl's literally doing a flip, and everyone else is sitting around having a lunch.
Yes.
Man, that's the
scene. That's to remind everyone that they, are cheerleaders.
That's right. And that's also the scene where Mandy Moore gets the ice cream cone shoved in her chest and smeared around by Anne Hathaway, which is a great scene.
Yes.
And right before that, she hits a douchebag with a baseball to the crotch. He deserved that.
Accidentally, which is even funnier.
Accidentally? She looked like she was about to kill someone when she swung the bat.
Well, yes, but baseball is not something... I mean, she's not Hank Aaron all of a sudden calling a shot, or if Babe Ruth calling a shot. But yeah, no. We have a weird softball scene.
Yes.
Where they're playing softball, and
really, it was only put together for her to get revenge upon the mean, evil, cute boy.
Without calling in Hector Elizondo to end her in the middle of the night. I mean, I just also loved if he was like black hat security, just went in, like just knifed someone. For the princess!
I have a very particular set of skills.
I mean,
you humiliated the princess of Genovia, you're going to die. This could be an amazing,
dark, R-rated movie. I'm just saying.
Imperial Zelda's version of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Like, why is the guy slightly nicer at the end? Did you see his, like, football jersey with a buck knife through it? And he's just, like, pinned to his wall, and the kid's like,
like, take him to the Tower of Genovia.
He wakes up, like, with a steering wheel in his bed. He's like, oh! Oh!
They referenced one of the other members of family joining a church, so maybe they still have the Inquisition.
Okay, so let's refilm the scene. Hector Elizondo and Julie Andrews are having the romantic dance moment. It's filmed like Beauty and the Beast. It pans around, looks down, and at the end, Julie Andrews kind of puts her head on his shoulder and just says, "Make the boys suffer." And then he smash cuts. He smash cuts. And he's standing outside with a knife to his side like you solid snake looking around. Takes down the sunglasses. Leaves the sunglasses on the door right by the kid. He picks them up and he goes, "The last thing you'll ever see." And he just shoves it. Hector Elizondo, Disney killer. He's their Michael Clayton. He's their fixer.
Long blonde hair gets scalped.
Ooh. I mean, this is still a Disney movie. Pocahontas is only a few years ago. You can't use the word scalped. instead of scalping, there's just a Mickey Mouse hat. Like, his hat! They took his hat! It's like a John Ford. John Ford never worked for me. For the mouse.
No.
Oh, God help us. All right. I mean, at this point, it becomes a teen drama.
Yes.
Yeah. She's having a falling out. Like, she doesn't know if she wants to do this stuff. She's learning, but because of the agreement. But, she literally has an argument with her friend, Lily, about, like, they're on the bleachers. Hector Elizondo is shooting hoops. Like, I don't know if I want to do this. I was jealous of you. They're sorting it out. Fucking IMDb trivia. They're like, this scene was improvised. It wasn't in the script that Anne Hathaway was supposed to fall, but she finished the scene anyway. I'm like, that's not improvised. They're like, there's like five improvised scenes you didn't know Anne Hathaway improvised. She fell over and really hurt herself. You're just like, guys. And they left it in. Gary never called cut. Gary was off drinking somewhere. And he just let it happen.
He was just ready to cash that sweet, sweet Disney check.
You know, I'm fixing my garage. And the contractors want a pretty penny from old Gary.
I wonder with big directors, I wonder if any of them just say, you know, I need to, like, be a completionist. I need to do a Disney movie. Sweet, sweet Disney money. I mean, like, if they went to Clive Barker and said, hey, you know, would you like to write a Disney movie?
Do you think
he'd jump on it? Do you think he'd do it? Because all these directors and actors were like, I did this so my kids can enjoy something and be proud of something I did.
Yeah. I mean,
you want to open this box to hell?
I mean, you're drifting dangerously close into every actor who's ever played a Batman villain. Oh, it's my kid's favorite character.
Exactly. It's the way they justify being in the horrible movie. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
Tommy Lee Jones said that about his Two-Face character. Like, literally, he's like, it's my kid's favorite character. I'm like, no, you just needed a new, like, master bathroom. Like,
exactly.
But you reminded me, like, that's such a funny pitch. It's just like, Stanley Kubrick? Is he going to see Michael Eisner? Oh no! Stephen King, could you write something for? Never mind. Like, it's just like, I do like that idea of a completionist. It's like Tarantino is just sweating.
Who did direct a Disney movie?
Who?
David Lynch.
Was it one of those scary 70s
ones? Which one? Dune?
The Straight Story.
No kidding.
Yep.
Oh. So it's not one of those scary 70s ones.
Nope.
Oh, dude.
But those would work.
But I mean, like, again, like. So we already did Baby's Day Out, but, like, you know, that kind of like a soft Disney, like Home Alone kind of a movie, directed by Marty Scorsese. Just It's the only way Buscemi would, Buscemi, Jesus, Joe Pesci would do another one of them. Uh-huh. But, like, can you just imagine, like, I'm going to fucking get that McAllister kid. No, sorry, you can't use it. You just, like, you know, what's their R-rated touchdown?
Yeah, touchstone.
Yeah. Yeah, so he just ends up on touchstone instead. Like,
Scorsese did have Hugo.
That's true. Hugo's fine. Yeah. Hugo's fine.
A Scorsese version of this where, you know, Hector Alexander just beats Surfer Boy, just retarded, like, to char chowder for breaking a princess's heart.
I'm going to take out retarded. Well, I'm going to. I'll let Daniel take out the art. We'll see. We'll see if he leaves that in, actually. But yeah, no. It's. This is also crazy. It's a G movie.
Yes.
It's been a long time since I've seen a G movie, because even Pixar movies are PG.
Well, Disney does this weird thing with princesses. If there's ever a princess, they, like, go hardcore and they create this vision of a perfectionist movie.
Yeah.
I mean, notice it. They prize their princess stories.
Yeah, and I mean, it didn't work out. This movie got a sequel.
Well, so it got a sequel.
So, but I mean, like, she even gets crowned at the end. Like, it really feels by the end like the third act of any of these movies, like Princess and the Frog, Cinderella, like, where she becomes the princess at the end, like the titular princess with the diary, which I thought would come into play more, actually.
Yeah, the diary's in it for like 2 minutes.
I mean, like, what it could have been, if you give it to her earlier, it's advice from her father that becomes partially the narration, which it does for half a second, but like, throughout. Like, or it would be even cooler if she gets this diary from another princess who doesn't want to do it, and it turns out at the end that it's Julie Andrews. And so all that advice from her book friend, I mean, because again, like, I'm not trying to infantilize her, but she's still a 14, 15, 16-year-old girl. I think at one point they say her age is 16 because she has a car, but no, she doesn't have a license yet. So
she's 15 and a half.
She's 15 and a half. In 2 weeks, she can drive.
But, like, that is something that Harry Potter...
I was thinking of Harry Potter with Harry Potter and Snape.
Harry Potter and Snape, but I was also thinking of, is it Ginny Weasley who finds the diary book? Like, that would be an interesting thing.
Well, but it's Voldemort, so...
Well, right, but it would still be interesting if there was, like, she, like, the only one who she can relate to is this boy in this book.
Sure.
And then it turns out to be Julie Andrews' diary, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, it's a Horcrux, and, like, portion of her soul is in there.
First of all, she clearly has power.
Yes. Right now, I'm imagining Snape giving princess lessons.
shoulders back, you look like you're going to fall over and you annoy me.
Oh, you're learning lessons from the half-blood prince you are. I remember you. I finished the joke you started. But yes, he would be the prince who teaches Harry how to, or better movie, Hermione how to princess, because she would hate it so much. With her frizzy dark hair and her learning. Oh, I figured out what I did. Because she looks like Anne Hathaway in the beginning of this. With the frizzy hair and the nerd and the awful.
Yep.
Hermione's really annoying. No, she's a great actress, but like, they make the character really annoying in the first two books. And then she gets sexy. And then they're like, maybe we could just put her in collegiate dresses. Which she hates. I'm sure she doesn't rewatch those later Harry Potter films anymore.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if someone like filmed 7 years of your most awkward years, would you want to go back and watch them?
No, especially when she, you know, developed, and they would always try to sneak in shots of her cleavage. I'm sure she was really proud of those moments.
Yeah.
You know who probably still watches those movies? The guy who played Malfoy. Like, because he's at the con. They probably just play behind him all the time.
Has he actually been anything since then?
No, and apparently he's broke, so he just shows up in whatever.
Rise of the Apes.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, so he just shows up
there. I think he was in Get Him to the Greek, because they actually mistake him for Draco Malfoy.
Wow.
Do they do the Ocean's 12 joke, or Ocean's...
Yes, Ocean's 12, where they keep mistaking that and Julia Roberts' character for Julia Roberts.
In fact, she does a gag. She does a con where she pretends to be Julia Roberts, and Bruce Willis shows up and goes, "Hey, babe," and kisses her. And you're just like, wow, that was awful. All of this was awful. But you know what's not as awful? This movie.
Yeah, so back to the movie, back to Julie Andrews, not Julia Roberts. Yes.
The Julie and Julia situation.
Julie and Julia.
That's
speaking of another Disney princess.
That's right. That's right.
Which, coming soon, you should really do that one, because they are doing a sequel to that.
That's been in the works forever.
Sequel to
but what? It's actually supposedly, like, happening.
Yeah.
Oh,
do we have any deets?
Enchanted. With, yeah. With
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams.
Okay, yeah. I'll take
Patrick
that.
Dempsey.
He's still alive.
I'm kidding. Patrick Dempsey.
And it was a story about a Disney princess, and they actually had people singing in it. Something yeah. that the movie did not have.
They had the beach party singers.
I mean, yeah,
but that doesn't count. That's terrible singing.
That's the same thing that cues up Jason Voorhees to kill a bunch of campers.
Like, exactly.
I will say it is funny when it turns into like a beach party bingo movie from the 50s, but like it's not necessary. We don't learn anything.
Yes. Oh, now they gave an idea for a crossover, Princess Diaries of Friday the 13th. They've got Jason frozen in the basement of the castle.
There you go. I will say that's when this movie feels the most Disney Channel too.
Yep.
Like we have kids just popping and singing and.
Well, I'm gonna steal a page from Matt Quinn's book. And
which
I'm
one?
Going to say that how I would have done it.
How I would have done it, yeah.
Is I would have cut 30 minutes.
Of course. Yeah.
I would have added musical numbers with synchronized dancing scenes.
Uh-huh.
And I would make it like a complete like musical approach to the story.
Mm. It would have made sense because it is a G-rated Disney movie.
Correct.
And B, are we already in the High School Musical and like Glee era?
Yeah,
we're
just starting to get into it. Yep.
Yeah,
but like, so why not? I mean, again, I'm glad this is a too long, but still 2-hour movie as opposed to like a mini series, which is what it would be now.
Well, I think what happened is they decided to take the movie's budget and they hired all these good actors, actually character actors, but good actors. And they put them in all these roles.
Right.
And they gave them a lot of lines and a lot of story. If you cut a lot of those actors out and those stories and put that money instead to singing and dancing,
right.
There you go.
Well, and I mean, again, comparing it to Mean Girls, but like, they hired here intentionally a lot of like, you know, the sexy teen Melrose Place kind of, you know, I mean, again, Mandy Moore. But by that point, Mandy Moore was almost Mandy Moore. You could have made her just another, like, teen model type.
Yep.
Cut away from her and just not give her any dialogue. Because, again, like, think of the end of Mean Girls. You can tell there's another generation of Mean Girls just by the way the girls walk, look, and kind of half-shove someone. They don't say a damn line. I perfectly understand with her friend, Anne Hathaway, talking about how people suck with a silent montage of people being assholes. Right? We don't need everyone to have a side story and a backstory.
Exactly.
And Mandy Moore tries to pretend she's a friend, and the blonde dude goes, hey, what if I make out with her and sell it to the paparazzi? And then she's naked changing, and Mandy Moore also pranks her. And we're just like, dude, not everyone needs to hate this girl. Like, it is the worst. Jeremy, what should we be talking about right now?
Oh. How this movie would have worked so much better had anyone other than Gary Marshall directed it.
Yes. You know what? Chris Columbus would have done a better job.
It would have been shorter, at least.
And it would have been someone who gets hit in the nearts.
No.
And the ball would have hit him harder in the crotch and not just the stomach.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, probably not, because a crotch shot, that pushes it into PG rating.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, it was a scandal.
My goodness.
You can't have crotch hits in PG movies.
I actually literally had the thought that I was like, I didn't know a non-animated movie could be rated G. I was watching and I was like, when was the last time a goddamn movie without a singing squirrel got a PG rating? Because even Pixar, like, or Zootopia might be PG.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty, I mean, it's addressing racism, but I'm like, it's kind of racist if it's not a G-rated movie. Anyway, whatever. I mean, we can get to the end. There's two gags. There's a George H.W. Bush at the Chinese embassy-esque dinner where she half throws up because the ice cream's cold. There's a dude trying to imitate her because he's the prime minister. It is a dinner scene.
Yes, yes, that was amusing.
My favorite part is the guy who gets up for no reason and says, "Why I never," and then trips on her. That's something.
Yes.
Yeah, these things are hilarious when you're a little kid, and then watching it now as an adult, this is painful to watch.
By the way, she is not depressive at any point in this movie. She just, everyone hates me, I wish I was invisible, which is right on the borderline.
Yep.
But when you ruin a state dinner like this, that's when things start looking bleak, man. Like, she doesn't want to be there, she doesn't want to be in her fancy dress, and she nearly kills 200 people.
Well, I think...
the salmon mousse...
Yeah, right.
To sort of wrap this up, basically, you know, what happens is, you know, all this scandal happens at the beach party. It's published in the newspaper.
Right.
You know, she's portrayed as a princess gone wild. Yes. The Julie Andrews dresses her down as the queen. And then, you know, she basically decides, I'm not going to be queen. I can't do it. I can't cut it. And... it goes back and forth, back and forth. She finds a letter from her father who basically talked about, you know, who he was and what he was doing and gave her advice.
Yeah.
And that's what made her want to decide to be a princess. Well, that and the fact that she believes it would give her a platform to do good in this world.
Which is her friend.
Which makes it a fairy tale, because who in power does good?
Exactly.
Right. I mean, her friend with her cable access show that has all of 12 viewers, which reminds me of my Twitter feed.
I will also say Matt's feed has 40 people. Her friend is the cartoon hippie from the 1990s.
Yep.
Every scene, she wants her friend to help at a Save the Blank rally. For absurd things, right? Yes. Like, and again, what it does is it's a boomer falsely equating someone who wants healthcare for everyone with save the whatever, right? It's save the water balloons. Like, it's nonsense. It makes no sense. But in every scene, she's like, but you were going to help me get signatures for blah. And that's her one joke, that she cares about shit and we should make fun of people who care about shit, right? And then it turns into a Three's Company movie where I'm supposed to have dinner with her and him and be on her blog. I mean, it's supposed to be up to date 2001. So they have a TV channel instead of like student radio or whatever.
Yep.
But it's funny because it's Sandra Oh behind the camera.
Yep.
But it's clearly portrayed like she should be at a coffee club reading a poem instead of this, because she has 12 people listening to her.
And that is something like that is something that only Gary Marshall will do, because like having a public access show that no one watches is like the most 80s thing ever.
Yeah, that is
70s and 80s thing. I mean, it's like the plot of a sitcom that Gary Marshall would write in 1979.
Or Zach Braff would do three years ago with that podcaster, where he was a podcaster on NBC or whatever that was. Speaking of, you reminded me just for half a second. We're recording this the week of the Super Bowl. None of us care. But the only commercial that I've seen that made me laugh was the Wayne's World one. And Garth Algar should have totally been the tech teacher. Like, the dude behind the camera. Like, because again, it's a joke from the 80s, right? But, like, if you gave it to anyone else, it would have been like, you know, you could have a joke here, Gary, other than the fact that her friends hate her, right? And by the way, insert 15th unnecessary character to have a backstory. This asshole with red hair who does magic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who is this guy other than, like, Lily's date to the special state ball where...
Mia
decides to come out as a princess.
First of all, if you're gonna date Roger Klotz from Doug or whatever, like, because he's also like, again, you're making fun of this kid for having dyed hair, but he's the only one who has dyed hair, and it's literally cartoon red.
Yes,
it's awful. But he becomes a love interest, literally. But fine, you know what? We don't need. She could just have a dude who hangs out. We don't need magic tricks. We don't need three character traits about the random redhead who she's going to date at the end of the movie.
Random redhead, Lily and Lily's brother, not Zac Efron, are pretty much the only people who don't treat Mia like crap.
Which I get. I get. I mean, there are stupid metaphor, but I heard the story last time. We have four major leaguers who come back and do practice with their old coach at Marist. Why? They're the only people who treat them like they're still people.
Yeah.
Everyone else wants to kiss professionals' asses. But yeah, so she deals with real people because everyone wants to either take advantage of her or steal her money or become famous because of her. And so we finally get her real friends at this ball.
Yep.
Which she gives a speech at after being run off the road. Like, that end scene, also, way too much.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
She doesn't want to go. She can't get the roof off of it on her Mustang, so she drives her Mustang home and then, I don't know, dies in a fire explosion. It's a weird scene. But Hector's there, drives her to the thing. She gives her, like, inaugural speech. Also, there all of a sudden in the third act, there's tension. Like, if there's not an heir, we get their country. Yeah, for these assholes.
Like, that is information that should have been at the beginning and should have been a major plot point along the way. Yeah.
I want you, right? You'll be my queen in your face. We got a postage
stamp. Them, and especially a young woman her age that was specifically trying to sabotage her as a princess.
Yes,
yeah. Would create a better freaking story.
Rival, Mandy Moore could have been the rival princess. If you paid for her, do that. But like,
yeah,
you're right. I mean, like, do halfway between, like, you know, what is it? The Prince of the Pauper kind of stuff. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, there's a challenge there. It's the throne is heavy. I don't want to do that. Like, that would have been something. But in the end, I don't know, Hector Elizondo pegs Julie Andrews, like, it gets really, like, they have the romantic lead. There's not really a romance for the kids, which, fine, they're 16. We don't need to have, like, a sex scene, like, it's really awkward. We don't have to do 16 candles. So Hector Elizondo and Julie Andrews were the whole romantic, which then should have been more of the movie.
They get it absolutely. The sequel, I think.
But then it would be like, you
sequel
know.
Doesn't count.
The it's queen dates the help, you know?
That's right. Oh, dude. I mean, is he a plumber? Because he's fixing them pipes. Dude, it's Julie Andrews, and she looks phenomenal in this movie.
Yeah, she does a really good job.
She really does. She's looking great.
She really does.
Anyway, I think we've covered this. I mean, you know, again, it's the plot of any other teen movie. She shows up at a new place. She's kind of awkward. But she's actually beautiful. She has a set of friends, including a dude who really loves her. But turns out, oh no, there's a cute guy that she really has a crush on. Don't worry, she's gonna date the cute guy because it turns out she's beautiful. But in the end, that original guy was better. Yeah, and she becomes a princess. Yeah, that's how every one of these movies
works. Yeah, they have two female gays make out fantasy sequences with douchebag early on.
Well, I mean, it would have been lovely to have a gay character. I mean, that was the thing about Mean Girls. Like, they have that joke, and it's a little bit dated now, but it's still okay. Like,
2001, they probably would have had their G rating poll for having a gay person.
To be fair, this is still Elizabeth Dole's America. I mean, you're absolutely.
I mean, tell me I'm wrong about the sad state of America.
I wish there were also minorities. There are very few. I mean, Hector Elizondo, but. He's supposed to be the bodyguard type.
Yeah.
You know, you're in San Francisco.
He's the help.
Well, yeah. Sandra Oh is a principal, but she's so...
You're also at a Catholic school on the West Coast.
No, in San Francisco.
Specifically. Yeah. A third of them would have been Hispanic.
Fair enough.
Or Asian.
Or Asian, right. And there's none. Well, there's
one Asian guy, I think, in the background.
There is. And also, again, like I mentioned earlier, I was watching Shazam this afternoon, so I'm thinking of also just terrible high school. Like, this is all a terrible high school experience. At the end, she comes out as a princess. She looks great. And then she has literally a Disney moment when she sees Michael, because, you know, Julie Andrews is already dancing, because she's dancing. And she's looking for someone to dance with her. And then all of a sudden, Michael comes out, and it's
magic.
Well,
because you saw me when I was invisible.
Then she gets her kiss.
The kiss
causes her foot to pop.
The foot pop.
And that turns on the fountains and the lights in the garden, and it became a Disney moment.
It was, because when she I almost said something terrible, so I'll say it. When she got wet and the movie got wet, because all the fountains turned on, it became the most magical moment.
But yeah, that football.
But I will say, I do love the fact that she has Disney princess dreams about her romance.
Yep.
What'd you get? I mean,
she wants her foot to pop.
Right. She wants to do the, you know, Katherine Hepburn, like, you know, 1940s movie foot pop when she gets her first kiss. Because, I mean, it is the most Disney way to do this because, again, it's, you know, she's all that or whatever. It's a sex joke. Right, like she wants to have a kiss that feels like an orgasm, but here's a foot pop. Like it's such a great Disney way to do this.
Yep,
and it's cute. I mean, I know this is an R-rated movie talk or R-rated podcast talking about a G-rated movie, but still, that's how it would be in a PG-13 10 Things I Hate About You version of this. Anyway, we talked about this. It's great. We'll go around the horn. I'll start with Jeremy, who hated this.
I didn't hate it. I think Julie Andrews is great. Anne Hathaway is great. I just think the execution was too old-fashioned. It's a movie out of its time. It needed a more modern hand to direct it, not a 60-year-old guy. That was its biggest issue. But other than that, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charlie?
Yeah. No, I think that it tried to do too much. I think that I'll agree with Jeremy. It was a little old-fashioned. You know, Gary Marshall probably brought a little too much dated material into it. I think that it was very much a character progression movie. I would have liked to have seen less of the character progression plot points. Is it about her trying to fall in love? Is it about her trying to decide to be a princess? Is it about her deciding, you know, how she's going to treat her friends? I mean, those distracted from the story, I think, that was trying to be told.
Right.
And I think that if they pumped up the antagonist element, maybe with the rival family, that we would have had an amazing movie. This ended up a little bit mediocre, but probably would be delightful for girls ages 18 to 15. I mean, 8 to 15.
I will say... Oh, Matt, sorry, you first.
Well, I went into this expecting to have a little girl movie because I remember my little sister, who's 10 years younger than me, watching it while I was babysitting her in high school. But it was actually much better than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as has pointed out, that the idea that there's a rival family that could inherit the throne if she doesn't is not touched on enough and too late, so that's a problem. And it could stand probably about half an hour shorter, but I actually kind of liked it. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. How am I going to put this? I'll try to summarize this. Movies that are one star are terrible. Two stars are try-harders, but they're awful. Three stars, we'll get back to. Four are good movies, and five movies usually feel like homework. They're movies I feel like I'm going to sit down and watch this. This is a three in the best way possible, in that it's inoffensive. If it was on, I might finish it, because it's fine. But I also don't feel bad if I'm like, I'm not in the mood to finish this today. Competently made, funny, it's punchy. It's way too long. I mean, Gary, give me a fucking break. But I will say, it's better than I thought. So, like, it's a very positive three. Like, if it came on in the afternoon, it's a perfect afternoon movie. You're not going to... You go to the bathroom, you make yourself popcorn. You don't even need to pause it. You're not going to miss anything. Every point is hit six times. But perfectly fine. If you guys like this kind of stuff, send me more, because... We will do all the Disney movies we mentioned tonight, but like I am sure there's shit from Disney Channel TV movies that I've never even heard of that would be great at this. Because this is the 90s kid version of watching Lifetime movies.
Let's get weird with 70s Disney movies, live action.
Oh, the like what's the one where they were ripping off Star Wars? They're trying to go to space.
There's the black hole.
Black hole.
Where a bunch of people end up going to hell.
Were there so then Horizon?
Well,
I mean, the Disney does Event Horizon. When Disney does Event Horizon. No, Matt.
And there's one called, like, The Guardian or The Watcher or something.
Watcher in the Woods.
Yeah. Or all, like, ghosts and stuff.
Is that the guy who leaves pornography under logs and stuff? Or
no, it's Betty Davis as the Old Witch of the Woods.
Wow.
Yeah. And The Cat from Outer Space is another one. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
Or you can do Chaps.
This is my childhood.
Oh, well, I mean, Charlie, you're going to have to help us program some next season.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I want to do Chips the War Dog, which is about the invasion of Sicily.
Oh, no, that's what? A good one, too. No, 1970s weird Disney, freaking awesome. Live action, that 70s was like a was nothing for like animation with Disney. It was like, you know, The Wasteland, but live action, Goldmine.
They were like, hey, Walt's dead. We can get weird now.
And they did. Bless their hearts.
You know, it was big Star Wars. What if we did that? Wait,
what?
So next time when Disney does Star Wars? No. So thanks for listening. Thank you, Jeremy, Matt, Charlie. Subscribe if you haven't. If you somehow just said they're talking about Princess Diaries, we do this a lot. So subscribe, follow us on Facebook, Twitter. I do Letterboxd for every movie we watch for the show. Otherwise, thanks for listening.
Myopia Movies is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. The theme song is Sheriff Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music under comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Weigel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.